Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. I'm just going to read the translation for the next verse, text 3, because there's no purport. Then Lord Brahma, who was infallible benedictions, departed, being worshipped by the best of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, being praised by great sages and saintly persons. Text 4. The demon Hiranyakashipu, having thus been blessed by Lord Brahma, and having acquired a lustrous golden body, continued to remember the death of his brother, and therefore be envious of Lord Vishnu. Purport. A demonic person, in spite of acquiring all the opulences possible to obtain in this universe, continues to be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 5 to 7, we'll just read the first verse. Savijitya dishak sarva lokam stratrin mahasura devasura manushendra gandharva garudo ragan sa hi Hiranyakashipu. Vijitya, conquering. Disha, the directions. Sarva, all. Lokam, planetary systems. Cha, trin, three. Upper, lower, middle. Maha Asura, the great demon. Deva, the demigods. Asura, the demons. Manusha, of the human beings. Indra, the kings. Gandharva, the Gandharvas. Garuda, the Garudas. Uragan, the great serpents. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakashipu became the conqueror of the entire universe. Indeed, that great demon conquered all the planets in the three worlds, upper, middle, and lower, including the planets of the human beings, the Gandharvas, the Garudas, the great serpents, the Siddhas, Charanas, and Vidyadharas, the great saints, Yamaraj, the Manus, the Yakshas, the Rakshashas, the Pishachas, and their masters, and the masters of the ghosts and Bhutas. He defeated all the rulers of all the other planets where there are living entities and brought them under his control. Conquering the abodes of all, he seized their power and influence. It's long translations, almost as long as the purport. Purport. The word Garuda in this verse indicates that there are planets of great birds like Garuda. Similarly, the word Uraga indicates that there are planets of enormous serpents. Such a description of the various planets of the universe may challenge modern scientists who think that all the planets but this Earth are vacant. These scientists claim to have launched excursions to the moon, where they have found no living entities, but only big craters full of dust and stone. Although, in fact, the moon is so brilliant that it can act like the sun in illuminating the entire universe. Of course, it is not possible to convince modern scientists of the Vedic information about the universe. Nonetheless, we are not very much impressed by the words of scientists who say that all other planets are vacant, that only the Earth is full of living entities. Once in a while, Prabhupada cast doubt on the version of the scientists. Not because Prabhupada at that time was a conspiracy theorist. Although, if we go through his books, he was a conspiracy theorist. even this 9/11, they say that they're conspiracy theorists. Well, the official narration is also conspiracy theory. Some people in a remote cave in Afghanistan got people with box cutters to defeat a $20 billion or $50 billion budget for security. They were able to do it with box cutters and defeat the biggest security arrangement that's ever existed. So that's also conspiracy theory. They were able to bring down buildings with airplanes, never done before, twice in a row. And you know, that's their theory. So here is another conspiracy theory, that actually the scientists are just either incorrect or they're purposely cheating. For instance, they say that there's no life on the moon. First of all, they say they went to the moon, which in itself is rather suspect, because if they went to the moon, why don't they keep on going back to the moon? They went to the moon with technology. I think it started in 69, they supposedly went to the moon. What was that? 68. So that was 50 years ago. More than 50, yeah, 50, around 50 years ago. And they went there with technology, which was 50 years old. And yet they never go back there again. After 50 years, they haven't advanced their technology. Somehow or another, they got these spacesuits, which were able to withstand the radiation on the moon. But when they had the Fukushima accident, then they couldn't use those same spacesuits to go into the Fukushima reactor. So why is it they had technology 50 years ago? They could avoid all kinds of radiation, like going through the Van Allen belt, and survive in a very thin spaceship. And yet they couldn't go into a reactor right here on the Earth to see what was going on. They couldn't even send a robot in that didn't break down. So anyhow, one can go through so many things, how somehow or another these astronauts, as we can see in the pictures, the rover is coming down on the planet, moon, and so much dust is being kicked up, and it lands, and there's not one speck of dust on the spacecraft. The planet moon was so ecstatic to have someone come and visit it that it decided it would clean personally itself, the spacecraft. And then the astronaut, jumps out of the spacecraft and lands on the moon, and all this dust is raised up. Doesn't disturb the spacecraft. And then he plants a flag on the ground. This is now is America. And the flag is so ecstatic, the flag starts to wave. Until they figured out there's not supposed to be any wind on the moon. There's no atmosphere, so there can't be a wind. So then the flag kind of realized it was, checked its ecstasy and stopped waving. And of course that part of the film was taken out. Of course, all the films, all these pictures they had, they took thousands of pictures, somehow or another they lost them. Maybe someone's daughter threw them out one day. They were doing some spring cleaning, decided to throw out all the film and all the movies and all the pictures. Anyhow, anyone with half a brain will wonder, you know, what's going on, why there are so many contradictions. The shadows are all wrong. You slow down the movie of them supposedly on the moon, jumping on the moon, they just, on regular speed, they're just walking on the moon. They're just, you know, just regular activity. It just doubled. But, you know, when you were 50 years ago, they didn't have the technology, so people were impressed to some degree by this science fiction movie. Expensive scientific movie, cost $50 billion. For that time, it was quite expensive. for a movie, but there was a much better movie. It was called Space Odyssey, put out by Kubrick, I think his name was. Kubrick, yes. A much better produced film. But there were excerpts from the Space Odyssey which was similar to the so-called moon landing. For instance, when they take off from the moon, you see the same picture, you know, they're supposedly taking off from the moon to come back. You see the same picture just going again and again and again. In other words, in the background, I guess it was a low-budget film. They wanted to spend the $50 billion on something else other than the film. So you just see the same thing going on again and again. So they don't replay this anymore. Do you ever see this, you know, this wonderful, very expensive excursion to the moon? But it's never on the internet. They never replay it. Because people think, well, this is really rinky-dinky. They go, this wasn't worth, you know, $1 million. I could have put something together now, you know, a low-budget film that would look a lot more impressive than this. In any case, if we look at the universe is not by accident, it's by design. Although the so-called scientists are trying to repress that idea that everything is by design, but it's so obvious. They go into the cell, and they can see that every single cell in the human, in every species of life is so intricately organized that one cell is more complicated than an entire city like New York with its transportation system, its sanitation system, its energy system. Everything, every single cell in the body is amazingly created in such a way as to work exactly as a city would work with energy and elimination and transportation, everything within one cell. And there are trillions of cells in the body, and they're being created and destroyed. No scientist could build such a cell. Now, if you can't build such a cell, then you don't know how it's come about. If you don't know how it's coming about, then your theories are just ridiculous. They're just nonsense. Now, if some scientist can build a computer, they show us the computer, they say the computer was made by a scientist, did such and such. So then you can say, all right, how did this computer come about? And the scientist can explain it. And then you know that the computer was not an accident. Or you know how the computer, what the origin of the computer was. They'll never say it just came about by chance. Then they couldn't put a patent on it. Try and make more money from it. If it just came about by chance. So they can't explain how even one cell has come about. They can't put together a cell. They have no idea. And they put forward science fiction as reality. And they get paid for it. So they're just a more expensive movie, science fiction production, that's all. And as Goebbels said, have you heard of Goebbels before? The Nazi propagandist. What is it? Goebbels, yes. You've heard of Goebbels? He was a good propagandist, so at least his name survived. So he said if you say the same lie again and again and again, then after a while people will believe it. Otherwise, because... And if you're controlling the propaganda, the narrative, then after a while people think that you must be an authority. If you can build this museum and take a little tiny bone that you found in the earth and build this huge skeleton 50 meters long, and claim this is what you found on the earth, although it's just from a little tiny bone they construct according to their imagination what this thing looks like, then people will believe it. Wow, so impressive. They go there like to a temple because they're built like temples, and they worship these bones. They look with awe and reverence, with folded hands, and bow down before it, even pay to go and see the deity. The bones in the museum that they constructed, made out of plastic. or concrete, whatever they utilize to make them with. So when they do that, and people go around, they think these people know what they're talking about. Otherwise, where do they get all the money from? Because people are not so what is these constructions meant for? Why are these lying propaganda? It's not just to get some admission to their museum. It's so that people become materialistic. People are paying for this whole thing, just keeping people in ignorance so they're materialistic, so they can go on as slaves to sense gratification. That people actually believe that there was a God and that the purpose of life is liberation from the material concept, their business would go down. People might even stop, you know, drinking alcohol and taking intoxication, killing their children, and gambling. They think that maybe there's some other purpose of life than just to gratify our mental concoctions. And then the people who are running things, their business would go down, and they'd become very upset. They couldn't control things as they used to. So obviously, they pay huge amounts of money for these propaganda that life comes from matter, and that everything came out of nothing, matter came out of nothing. So they can keep people in prison in this conception and keep them trying to gratify their senses as the only purpose of life. And nowadays, of course, previously they used to line people up and shoot them if they had the wrong idea. Now they just censor them because there's so much noise in the internet. You don't have to shoot anyone so far. You just have to eliminate them from the internet, from your Facebook or from your whatever else it is. Just censor them in the name of public protection. So they do the same thing for this. All these so-called theories that life comes from life and that we never came to the moon and there are planets. Of course, if you have little green spacemen as the aliens, that's always popular. Make the people, there may be some aliens, but they always look like little green spacemen. They come here looking for green cheese to eat. So they're not really, that they can let people have their imagination, you know, any kind of thing, they're coming from the middle of the earth or they're coming from some kind of other planet, you know. They're always flying around in a saucer, something that, you know, looks like here. They took from your grandmother's table. You know, it was what the coffee cup was sitting on. They took it and they filmed it, called it a flying saucer. That's where the aliens are coming on, your grandmother's flying saucer. But the reality is that what our philosophy is, it defeats all this false conceptions, because we know that our bodies are changing, but we're not changing. The soul is always the same. So no one can disprove that. People may not listen to it. They may not even agree with it. But they can't change the reality of it, that everything in the material world, including our bodies, are changing. But we, the observers and the experiencers, we're not changing. So all this fear and propaganda that you're going to die is ridiculous, because no one ever dies. No one can die. It's not possible. Even if you want to die, you can't die. And as far as the body dying, as I said before, the body can't die because it's already dead. If you have a dead body, you can't kill it. You can't go up to a dead body and say, look, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to kill you. It's not going to listen to you. It couldn't care less. Doesn't even care, more or less, because it's dead. It's not even aware of what you're talking about. There's no awareness. So the body has no awareness. It's simply dead. So it can't die. It's always changing. You never take the little baby picture you have and go to the cemetery and bury it and say, oh, this used to be my little baby body, but now it's disappeared. I don't know where it went, but I'm sure it's dead. And so let's have a ceremony and bury this baby picture in memory of my baby body. I don't know where it went. Someone may have kidnapped it or something, but who knows? No, it disappeared. It's not there anymore. It's more than dead. it disappeared. And no one knows where it went. You can't even find it. Even if you look for your entire existence, you wouldn't be able to find it anymore. But no one cries, "Oh, my baby body's disappeared. Where is it? I want it back." Don't worry, you'll get one back. Because it was never you. It was never really in existence. It was your imagination that you were that baby body. And the reality is it was just a combination of these energies of Krishna, called earth, water, fire, air, and ether. It's just some combination of these energies which are everywhere anyhow. Even these energies didn't disappear, they didn't die, they're still there. They've just transformed into some other form. So that's our reality. No one can defeat that philosophy. And if we stick to that philosophy, then all this nonsense thing about every life coming from nothing makes no sense. Because even nothing comes, even this energies come from life. The supreme life. And to say the world has no foundation, there's no God in control, is also can be easily demonstrated. That they cannot even duplicate even a fraction of what Krishna has done. Let them put one sun in the orbit and heat up this earth. Let it rise at an exact time. Let it set at an exact time. Let it provide exactly the amount of heat and light that we need to survive. If they figured out how it happened, then let them do it. Let them create a little sun. If they can't do it, they don't know how it came about. And you say, well, we don't have enough energy. Well, it'll just take a little bit of energy. Otherwise, science means you have a theory, you have an experiment, you have an observation, then you have a conclusion. But they have their conclusion without any theory, without any observation. They just have a conclusion. But they can't demonstrate anything. So let them create one little sun, size, not very big, and they can put it over the North Pole and help out the Eskimos in the winter. If they think that's too difficult, then let them create a little tiny sun. Let's put them in this temple, a little tiny sun. And during the winter, we can save so much money on electricity and heat. You can just float around here during the day, and at night it can float, in the back room. We don't need it anymore. They can't even make a sun the size of a nail. So it's all a bluff, actually. It's all science fiction, because they don't know who they are. They don't know how this world's come about. They're just bluffing people and convincing them that they're their body and that they should gratify their senses so they can buy all the poisonous, useless things that they're manufacturing, distract people from the real goal of life, to realize who the real God is rather than these false pretenders of being the controllers and being the knowers of everything. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? It's all right. Go ahead. No, you already have. You're right there. Give it to him.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a question, from yesterday's lecture.
Who remembers yesterday? I didn't even remember yesterday's
lecture. No, please. you said okay. About last coming from last desires coming into our heart from ears and eyes.
Yeah.
So, and I was also looking through these poems of our acharyas. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has a poem, three poems of Gopinath.
One poem with three parts.
Yeah, one poem with three parts. Thank you. Yes. So I was just wondering this when I heard the translation. It really shocked me what he was talking about, and I couldn't put it together. Why he was talking about these lusty desires and addressing to Krishna's Gopinath, because can you explain a little bit more? Because I thought that he will address this to Krishna's Keshava, the controller of senses, or I don't understand.
You have something against Gopinath?
No. I mean, if it's he, the source of my liberation, please, Gopinath.
Yeah, Gopinath is the Prayojana deity. It's only by becoming in falling in love with Gopinath that all lust and material illusion will go away. Only when we develop ecstatic love for Gopinath do we become free from all material conceptions and desires. Love is the object. The deity for taking care of the beginning of lusty desires is Madan Mohan. By understanding things properly, then we can restrain our senses. Then when we engage in active service to Krishna under the guidance of Govinda, who attracts our senses, then we get free even more. We get more mercy from. But when we develop ecstatic love for Gopinath, the positive, the most positive, then when we actually are bhava and love is awakened, then every trace of material desire goes away.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. There is a usual objection to our taking exception to the material progress, not only towards Krishna's devotees, but many religions, that if we criticize the materialistic science, then we should not use their inventions. So if we use computers, telegraph, telephone, ships, cars, and so forth, there are the trains, whatever are the inventions of the modern science, then the claim is that we are not honest in our criticism of.
But it's not their inventions, it's Krishna's inventions. Krishna is the one who's giving them the intelligence to create these things, and he's giving them the intelligence to create them so he can use them in his service. That's what they're meant for. Otherwise, because they're misusing these things in Maya's service, that's what we're criticizing. But they were invented to be utilized in Krishna's service. And they didn't invent them. Krishna gave the intelligence. Krishna is the inventor. He's the Upadrasana Mandacha Bharata Bhokta Maheshwara. He's the one who's controlling the whole thing, not them. They're all, it's Krishna's property, it's not their property, to be utilized in his service. So we criticize them stealing, that's all. They're stealing from Krishna and taking the credit for it.
I had a guest student once in one of the courses, he who was like on the border of joining, and he was, I think, an anthropologist. So he said he can accept Krishna. He was chanting. Eventually he has become either a devotee or a very favorable, someone very favorable to devotees. We are still a little bit in touch. So he said he can accept reincarnation, Krishna, chanting, everything. But he has trouble accepting all the conspiracy theories that we have. So he says if he doesn't have to accept those, then he can chant and worship Krishna and...
Which conspiracy theories does he like? It's all... Everyone has their conspiracy theories.
Well, let's say those that are not mainstream.
Which one? He doesn't like the fact that we deny that people went to the moon?
Like this, yeah.
That there are actually... We say that on the moon there are living entities of a higher nature, and that they didn't, how could they have gone to a place which is supposedly a desert, no atmosphere whatsoever, and they didn't find anyone there.
He will accept the Vedic description of the moon, but he will not accept that there was no spaceship going somewhere.
Yeah, so what? It doesn't make any difference. Prabhupada's just pointing these things out because we're not into proving to people whether they went to the moon or not. Prabhupada's point is that there are people all over the universe. The description in the Vedic literature of the demigods and the sub-demigods is not just, you know, some poetic imagination from Vyasadeva. It's actually is a reality.
This he accepts.
Yeah, well, that's all we're trying. That's the why Prabhupada's pointing it out, not to, you know, he couldn't care less. I mean, in one sense, we know that those who are asuras are in charge of the world right now, just like during Kamsa's time or Hiranyakashipu's time, whatever. So, but that's not our main point. Our main point is that Krishna is everywhere, and that he's the whole universe has a purpose. That purpose is to become Krishna conscious, and who, you know, whatever they went there or not makes no difference. The important thing is wherever they go, they should be Krishna conscious. We should be Krishna conscious here too. That's our main point. So whether people accept they went to the, as long as they're utilizing things of Krishna service and accept the Vedic version, that's all we have to say. So for sometimes Prabhupada would say, well, maybe they went to the moon, maybe they went to Rahu. Prabhupada said so many different things because he wasn't really so much concerned with this particular point, whether they, specifically whether they went to the moon or not. But when they decry the Vedic version, that's what Prabhupada's concerned about. Yes.
Thank you for the lecture. Maharaj, if we take, for example, this last coronavirus happening around this thing, if some people, I mean, I heard something about creating the virus to eliminate old people who are costly, but anyhow, measures taken were all the measures taken were to prevent this, and there was big big costs because production stopped. So we saw something beginning sequence of taking actions of different governments headlessly.
Well, maybe you can make the question a little bit shorter rather than
I'm sorry.
Give you the whole narration.
No, I just want to make a point that how this, that probably the only conspirator possible is Krishna making and creating this theater to show us that governments and we are clowns all together headlessly running.
I think Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita to do that. Everything else is just a manifestation of that karma, whatever. People get their karma. Nothing. We can see in Kali Yuga things are not very auspicious. There's three kinds of miseries, and people are bestowed ample amount of these three miseries. But that's because of their not following Krishna's direction, because they're acting sinfully. So our solution is we should get people to follow Krishna's direction, and then these threefold miseries will go down. Otherwise, it's not possible. Somehow or another, they're going to come about. You can't avoid the laws of material nature as a conditioned soul. All right, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.